Hello, world.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show. Today is March 28th. It's 8 o'clock a.m., that is, in sunny Arizona. It's another beautiful morning today. For those of you in Europe, you're probably wondering why we're starting an hour later today. Well, you may have noticed that you changed your clocks. And see, we're starting as usual at 8 a.m. in Arizona. But if you change your clocks, it seems like we're late. No, you just tuned in too early. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and looking forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday right here on Blog Talk Radio, the Boomer and Babe. If you want to get a reminder directly to your email so that you can remember about this show, there are two things you can do. First of all, you could send me an email, and that email address is ron@wealthdna.us, and we'll keep you posted about future shows and events. Also, in the upper left-hand side of the screen you're on, there's a follow button. You'll be informed of this show and other great shows on the Boomer and Babe channel. You'll find shows geared to the top three areas that most people are concerned about. That's health, wealth, and happiness. Health, of course, has three aspects: physical health, mental, and spiritual. All of those areas are covered on this network. This weekend, I thought of another way to couch those important aspects about our lives, the things that we worry about as we get older. You see, there's only one alternative to getting older, and I got to tell you, it's not any better. The three areas of concern are physical health, our mental health, and our wealth. Our wealth, because we worry about running out of money before we die, and that's what this show is all about, making sure you don't run out of money. If you wonder why I left off spiritual health and happiness off of that list, I don't think these are two things that wane as you get older. What degrades is our physical health, our mental health, and our wealth. And that's what this network is all about, and this show will help you work on your wealth. I'm a firm believer in lifetime learning. Just to give you an example, this past week I took a two-day course in memory techniques. Something that really shocked me in terms of the effect on us as we get older. I'm really excited about the prospects of not only learning new things, but now remembering more of the ones that I already learned. Maybe I'm getting a bit off track from what you expect of this show. Ways to enhance your wealth. And of course, introducing the theme of today's show, and most importantly, my special guest. But one more bit of housekeeping. During the radio show, we welcome you to ask questions. You can do that one of two ways. Either enter the chat room by clicking that green button in front of you, or call in, and that number, 917-388-4162. Let me repeat that, 917-388-4162. We'd love to talk to you or to get your questions across the chat, and we will address them. Today, we've got, and you may recall, Ed Sullivan would say, a really great show on the entrepreneurial revolution. Our guest today is Pete Peters, who, by the way, is doing double duty today. You see, he's the producer of our show and our guest. So if you call in, you'll come right online. There's no pre-screening in the back room today. He's in the front room. He'll join me here on the microphone in just a moment. Let me share with you a little bit about Pete Peters. He's not a shy guy, but let me tell you some of his background. We also affectionately refer to him as the Boomer, since he's one of the co-creators of Boomer and the Babe radio show, the radio network. And they're all part of Boomer and the Babe, Inc. See, H.B. Pete Peters is an author, radio talk show producer, and a co-host. He has done over 500 shows to date. And he's a videographer. I can't even pronounce that one. I can't do it, that's for sure. He's been in advertising marketing for the past 40 years, helping small and large enterprises. Among other things, Pete was marketing director for the San Diego Business Journal. Most of you are pretty familiar with the Business Journal in your own city. Well, he was the marketing director in San Diego and part of the original marketing team that launched the Arizona Lottery. The Arizona Lottery. By the way, speaking of the lottery, if you follow it or if you happen to play, since the jackpot was big, someone did pick the right numbers this Friday. They end up with $312 million. Let's hope they become regular listeners to this show so they can triple that money or quadruple it, rather than losing it as most winners do. Back to Pete. Pete has developed fundraisers, led community events, still does, served on boards of directors for several nonprofit organizations. Pete's been the organizing force behind golf tournaments, walkathons, youth activities, and special events. And with that time schedule, it's not always easy to pry him away. Let's give him a warm radio welcome. Welcome, Pete, and thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Ron. It's interesting to be on this side of the microphone and doing double duty. We're on this side of the microphone and doing double duty on our own shows, but it's a little strange doing it on yours.
That's right. That's right. Being interviewed rather than interviewing, right?
Right.
And you know. You obviously know that the one being interviewed has to do a lot more thinking because they have to respond to those
questions. Yeah, I've got all kinds of notes.
just to be ready for anything I throw at you. Hey, I've given a thumbnail sketch of your background. Maybe you should share some of the steps in your career. From what I can see, you've covered every aspect of broadcasting, publishing, marketing, and PR. So give us, how did you get there? Where did you go?
Wow. I went to school at a small business college in Michigan. Oh, those many years ago when I was no more than a mere child. More than 2 years ago, exactly. Started there, went from there to major metropolitan newspaper, the Detroit News, that's now almost defunct, as advertising sales representative. Moved on from there to do some retail work in Illinois, met the mother of my daughter, came from there back to Michigan for a short stint, and then out here to Arizona, working in newspapers here. As you mentioned, working at the lottery here, was transferred out to San Diego. Somebody hired me, transferred me out to San Diego for the Business Journal. Spent a lot of time in San Diego, worked for a couple of other newspapers, started my own newspaper, did some wow. newspaper and magazine consulting. And then came back here to Arizona about 7 years ago now, 7 or 8 years ago. Live here with my now wife and the other half of the Boomer and the Babe portion of the duo. And we have this business, and we've been together for 23 years and doing business together for 23 years as well.
And, you know, I guess I didn't realize this was your second stint in Arizona.
It is.
So I guess you'll like it here.
Yes, I do. Well, I often said to people when they asked, you know, we were in a conversation one time in one of those conversations that you have in a bar.
Right.
You know, and somebody said to me, where would you ever move back to after the several places you lived? And I said, I would move back to Arizona in a heartbeat. And little did I know that that heart would beat that way a little bit later.
It was a short heartbeat away, right?
Yes, exactly.
I've chosen the theme as one of your specialties. You talk about the entrepreneurial revolution. It's a tongue twister first thing in the morning, which I think relates well to the radio program and what we try to do in helping people build their wealth. Does it sound like a good topic to work with?
Let's go with that, sure.
Okay. Tell us, why is that entrepreneurial revolution important in today's economy?
Well, the way I look at it and the way we've kind of defined it is that the way things are going nowadays with the governmental organization, whether it be local government, state government, national government, they will stand in front of us and they will trumpet the idea that it's the small businessman that is the heartbeat of this country. They are going to drive the economic future. They are going to drive the recovery. And they don't do anything to help us do it. It's up to us. We as entrepreneurs need to shoulder that load ourselves, and therefore we've come up with the Entrepreneurial Revolution along the lines of, if it's to be, it's up to me. We've got to do it ourselves, and we need to work together. And the revolution part of it is not a second amendment remedy by any stretch, but it is a business remedy for small business and small business people and entrepreneurs to work together, share best practices. And if I've got a problem in finance, maybe there's somebody else that's had a similar problem in finance, and we can discuss that, and they can tell me what they did,
right,
and we can see how that's going to work and see if I can adapt some of their thoughts.
So if it's to be,
it's up to me.
I like that you should coin that. You should get that quoted and into Roger's thesaurus or wherever it is to make sure that you get authorship of that. There's always a silver lining to these recessions. It's hard to believe with all the damn recessions and, you know, how painful they can be. Well, this great recession, we just survived, and hopefully it is over. There's no exceptions. As a matter of fact, it may be one of the extremes. People learn to be more self-sufficient, that they don't rely on that job, on that employer, on that government, or whatever else. Do you agree with that?
Well, you've got to. You've got to nowadays. There's no such thing, in my opinion, and it started way back when. See, when my dad retired from Ford Motor Company at 55 years old, how old would he be, 35, 40 years ago now, he retired with more than a gold watch. It was a nice pension. It was health insurance for he and my mother, which she is still the benefit of today. There was a lot of loyalty there. There was loyalty on his part to the company and loyalty on the company's part to him. That's not the way it is. Now it's a case of they want to cut you loose, it seems to me. I have no other than anecdotal evidence, but it seems to me that they want to cut you loose before you come what sometimes is called vested. When they have to start matching your retirement and they have to start matching all of the funds that you've put in, all of a sudden they don't want you there anymore because you're too much of a cost burden. It's like the guy that says when he gets to be 50 years old, 55 years old, he's going to trade in his wife for 2 25s. And it's the same thing in business. They're going to trade in the 55, 60-year-old. They're going to reduce that force. They're going to take his salary, split it up between 2 25s,
right,
and get twice the work out of twice as much people for the same money.
Right, and not give them a pension anymore.
And not give them a pension anymore. Fund your own stuff.
Yeah, and admittedly, a lot of things have changed since they put those assumptions together, what they could afford.
Right,
so,
exactly.
That is a factor. No, well said. In searching for ways for me to grow my business and to help people, and part of that business is to help other people become wealthy, I chose to work with you guys.
And we appreciate that, believe me.
Well, and tell our listeners a little bit about the services you provide, because it's obviously not just launching a radio show, which is part of that that work.
Well, let's use you as an example and your business as an example. You are an author yourself. You are in the process of writing the book,
Ten Commandments of Investing. Right.
And once that book is completed, we will be putting that up on the e-books. E-book readers. It'll be an e-book. People will be able to download it, read it, enjoy your wisdom. We're also going to be doing a book trailer for you. You have this radio show that we're on today as part of the package that we put together for you. And we continually work with getting your things posted on through Blog Talk and others so that you can be showing up strong on the Google search.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kinds of package that we put together for you, and that's what we put together for our authors. And then there are a myriad of other things that we do, mini books. We do business consulting. We've helped you develop a couple of things through a consultative effort that we had with you. So there's really not much in marketing that we can't do. We always say the answer is yes, and then we'll make sure that we get it right after we've said yes, because there's a couple of things that we do that are maybe a little different from some other marketing companies. We realize where our limits are. There is a point beyond which we may not be able to go knowledge-wise, possibly with contacts and so on and so forth, there's on a compendium of 1 to 100. Let's say we can get to 80,
mm-hmm.
but we know and recognize that you need something between 80 and 100.
Right, in certain aspects.
We know where to go to get that last 20%.
Gotcha.
To get it for you at a reasonable price and get it to you from very good, substantial purveyors.
Okay.
And that's part of what our package is all about. We are truly marketing consultants in that area.
But it's not just charging somebody a fee and saying, here's what you should do. It's helping them do it.
Oh, no, absolutely. We actually get our hands dirty. We roll up our sleeves and we put our shoulder to the wheel and we go to work. In my nationality background, which is Scandinavian Finnish, there's a word that's called, that is sisu, S-I-S-U. There's no literal translation for it in the English language. It has to do with stamina and guts and fortitude and just plain old good grinding hard work. And that's the way we do it. We have, as we like to term, we have sisu.
So that's good. I didn't know that word. Not so many people know Finnish. So.
And I don't know much, but I do know
right.
that one.
That's right. Okay. I didn't mention your book yet. We haven't talked about that. It has to do, and you're going to tell us a little bit about it here. It has to do with about business lessons you found in your golf bag.
It is, yes.
And I'm not a golfer. I know a few golf jokes, not many that we would use on radio. But how would I, as a non-golfer, take advantage of some of those lessons?
Well, because I have this love of golf, and it comes from my father years ago when he and I used to, I can tell golf stories, touching stories about me and my dad playing golf many years ago. And he used to wake me up at 4:30 in the morning, make me some greasy eggs and bacon, and we'd go trekking out to play golf. And we would play golf before we get to the course as the sun was coming up, and the dew was on the grass in Michigan, and we would hit the golf ball, and our feet would be soaked by the time we got to the second hole from the dew, and the golf ball rolling down the fairway, and rooster tails flying up behind the ball. And those are nothing but great memories with my dad and myself. But there was always something that he taught me along the way, and that was you play hard, just like you work hard.
Mm-hmm.
You play honestly and fairly, just like you work honestly and fairly. You give it everything you got, play to the best of your ability, just like you work to the best of your ability. There is a definite correlation. There are many things you can do on a golf course, many things, tools you can use, different clubs for different situations.
Right.
There are different hazards that you have to avoid. Just like in work, there are many different clubs that you use. They could be Twitter, it could be Facebook, it could be any of the social media, it could be PR, it could be a radio show, it could be television. All those are tools or clubs,
right,
if you will. And the most important thing is you've got your brand. Your brand is what you want to make sure that you establish your brand and keep your brand pure, because you never know when your brand is going to save you, and if it's not pure, it can ruin you. Your golf ball, in this case, is your brand. You want to keep it out of trouble.
Okay. One of the jokes that I know about golf, and I didn't forewarn you about this one, is that golf is like sex. You don't have to be good at it to enjoy it. Now, given that, does that mean you don't have to be good at business to succeed at it? that would be taking that analogy far, wouldn't it?
Well, you could learn to be good at it.
Okay.
You could learn to be good at it, just like you learn to be good at sex.
Okay.
Some people have innate abilities in both areas. Others have to learn technique,
okay,
shall we say.
Okay.
So I guess you could say that you don't have to be good at it at first, but you better be willing to learn and learn quickly. Because if you don't learn quickly, you will not succeed. And that really is, in my opinion, really is the case. You have to learn and you have to adjust, and you have to be able to kind of go with the flow, so to speak, and make your decisions based on knowledge, not based on just what you would like it to be. If I started my business the way I thought it was going to be, that I was going to be able to be in business for myself and play golf whenever I wanted, I learned real quick that that was not the case.
Unless you're in the golfing business. That's
unless you're in the golfing business. I tried to be in the golfing business.
Try that as well. Give us a few more examples of the lessons you learned. And the ones you mentioned in that book.
Well, I'll stay with the branding area.
Okay.
If you don't mind, there is an example of somebody that Deborah and I know that has a business in California. He'll go unnamed for no good reason other than I never told him I was going to talk about
tell him
about
this, especially on a radio show.
But he has a land use planning business. Now, a land use planning business, and he was very well connected with one of the coastal cities in California, branched his business out, was doing very, very well. And then in the 80s, we had that economic downturn. He and the... In the interim, and leading up to that, had expanded, gone to a bigger building, hired all kinds of staff, and all of a sudden he found himself in real, real trouble. So he had to downsize.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately, he had a wonderful brand. The name of his business was his own name as well.
Okay.
He had to downsize, and because he had paid such close attention to his brand and his name, and making sure that it was well-regarded,
right,
his brand saved him through the rough times. He moved back to where he was before, into the small digs,
right,
unfortunately had to downsize, let people go,
sure,
managed, as I understand it, to sublease the big building that he was involved in, got that taken care of, and it was all due, in my opinion, to his great brand that he had. He's now back up on top, working in a big high rise or in a high rise that overlooks the Pacific Ocean, working I think 3 or 4 days a week, and probably making more money than he ever has. But it's all because his brand saved him.
Right.
The other side of the coin is when your brand, when you torch your brands, you can also torch your business. If you've got a brand, you're XYZ company, and you hire salespeople,
right,
and your salespeople cause you all kinds of problems. You can. They also say, "Well, look at that guy. He's such a jerk, or she's such
right.
a jerk."
The XYZ company is the jerk.
The XYZ company becomes a jerk, and if you're not attuned to that, and if you're not watching your brand, you could be in some big time trouble.
Fair enough.
There's a thing here in my book. I'm going to just
sure.
if I can look this up real quick. There's a piece about. There's a lot of time spent on branding in the book, and there
okay.
and I have all kinds of quotes in here of what people define a brand as being. And I'll start looking for that maybe if you want to go
sure.
to something else.
I would. But let me ask you on that. Within your book, how is the brand identified? Is it a golf ball? Is it the golf bag? I mean, I think of many
the brands. The brand is the golf ball.
Okay.
The brand is the golf ball because the golf ball is what you're caring for when you're playing golf. You don't want to hit it in the water. You don't want to hit it in the trees. You don't want to cut it. You have an objective with the golf ball, and that is to get into the hole as quickly and efficiently as you can without causing any damage, without losing it, certainly.
Okay. Yep.
The brand is the golf ball.
Okay. All right, I wanted to make sure I understood that. Okay. You're also working on, before we get back into the branding, and if you can find that, it'd be great. You're also working on a mini book, as I recall, about Nest. Now, when I first heard that term, Nest, and gee, you're the boomer and the babe, I think of empty nesters and people leaving home. And tell us, what does Nest really mean?
Nest, N-E-S-T, nurturing the entrepreneurial spirit today. Entrepreneurs, and that's part also of the entrepreneurial revolution.
Right.
And that they have to be nurtured. We all have to be nurtured somehow, some way. After all, you're going out there on your own right now.
Right.
I mean, you're out there slaying dragons, you and your sword, and that's all you've got.
Correct.
So you're out there having a good old time.
Or not.
Or
some
not.
Days,
or not. Hopefully you are having a good old time. I know we're having a good old time. But you need to be nurtured. There are people that get into business all the time, and it's an unintended entrepreneur. They never intended to start this business,
right,
and they need help. They need nurturing. I mean, how many of us, when you stop and think about it, have got into business because there was a reduction in force, or somebody said to us, "Oh man, that's really a neat widget that you do as a little sideline. Why don't you sell that?" And you start to believe it, and you start to do it. Or maybe you just said, "I'm tired of this baloney. I'm
right.
quitting. I'll show them, and I'm going to go show them how to do it myself." And all of a sudden, you're out there flopping around like a fish on dry land. You don't know what the heck's going on. So that's what NEST is all about, nurturing that entrepreneurial spirit today. That's what we're doing with our NEST program and our NEST book.
It's tied in a little bit with what you said earlier in terms of support, learning from others, and those kinds of things as well, because I had a really bad day last week. I usually really enjoy what I'm doing. We had funding pull out. The very last minute, we're closing on two properties on Friday, and one of our funding sources said, no, we're not going to do the deal. Talk about scrambling, you know, losing the property, losing the earnest money, and all that kind of stuff. So if you didn't have a support network, if you're out there totally on your own, you didn't have a team working with you and caring about you, or you didn't have the family or your own, you know, your partners or, again, people you work with, it really could be miserable. Now, as a finance guy, when I think of becoming an entrepreneur, unfortunately, you're right. Very often it's by happenstance. But I think of finding a business model that is triggered by a need. Hey, it's a great widget because I could use that kind of thing. I mean, I could use all sorts of examples of that, from simple things like the cardboard screen on the front inside of a windshield that without those we would die here in Arizona in the summertime, which eventually became fancier version, but nonetheless started out as a simple idea, and something that can be profitable and sustainable. I mean, those are kind of, again, I'm looking for a finance guy saying, does this business model make sense? Now, when I talk to you, I realize that's necessary. Yes, it's got to make financial sense, and it's got to be something people want, but it's not sufficient. Tell us why not. Why a good idea that's financially sound and is needed by others isn't all by itself going to work?
There aren't many things that you can come up with that without some kind of publicity, some kind of marketing, some kind of movement and directing movement in its direction, that are going to go and stand strictly on their own only by word of mouth. Everything needs to have a little, in my opinion, has to have a little push somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The pet rock didn't take off until, sure, it was a fine, freaky little idea, but it didn't take off till all of a sudden it started to gather no moss, so to speak.
Right.
Rocks gather no moss. And it rolled. And it did roll. And it just grew and grew and grew. And I was reading an article on the internet just 2 days ago about some of these other inventions or ideas that brought in lots and lots of money. And we're not talking about thousands. We're talking about millions of dollars. Pet rock, the slinky. Whoever thought of the slinky, not to mention the hula hoop and all these things. And these people have made millions of dollars, but they all had to do something, and that is they all had to market it. So the product standing by itself, just sitting on the shelf, my, wouldn't that be nice if somebody would buy it?
Right.
You know, just because you hang a sign on the door doesn't mean people are going to beat their feet and form a big line. That build it and they will come doesn't always work.
Right. That was one of those quotes, I guess, we learned in grade school. That build a better mouse trap, or that was a poem or something, or whatever,
something
saying,
like
but basically build a better mouse trap and the world will beat a path to your door. If nobody knows that mouse trap is there, they ain't coming.
You've got to tell them you got a better mouse trap, and then you got to show them you got a better mouse trap.
Okay, so if a listener wants to become an entrepreneur, let's say they're working a job or out of a job or looking at other alternatives, they want to become an entrepreneur, do something on their own. You usually stress branding as a key consideration.
Yes.
First of all, what is branding?
Branding is the first thing that people think of when they think of your business. The very first thing. Before you do anything else, you need to create your brand. Without a brand, you are nothing. Your brand tells everybody about you. Your brand is what creates a sense of anticipation as to what people can think and expect of you as a business. When you say Ron Naraki, Wealth DNA, the Ronald, people know with your branding now that you are involved in the investment arena in some way, shape, or form. They may not know specifically,
sure,
but they know that you do it. They know that you have been well spoken of, that you do it well, and that you have their best interests at heart. That's the brand. If you didn't have that brand, they wouldn't know. Brand is number one. You have to have the brand first. Without the brand, you're nothing. You can't just have your brand develop and say, let's use ours as an example. The Boomer and the Babe is our brand, okay? Now, there may be some question in some people's minds as what do the Boomer and the Babe do? Well, we know that the Boomer and the Babe are on the radio and they do videos. We appear in these videos, we appear on, or we are heard on the radio. Mm-hmm. But we are also, Boomer and the Babe Inc. is a multifaceted multimedia marketing company. So our brand, Boomer the Babe, can mean many things to many different people. Sometimes that's not always good, and we have to realize that. So, because some people will look at us and say, man, you do that too? Mm-hmm. And you say, oh, you're schizophrenic. You guys are all over the map. But yes, we are. But that is our brand, and we can help many more people that way.
Well, but it also has certain connotations in itself. When I think of the name Boomer the Babe, I may think about individuals, since I know I've gotten to know you, but I also start drawing up images of the baby boomer and that whole era, that 20-year or 18-year period of people born in that period, a huge number of people. I don't think of Generation Xers.
Right.
I don't think of you running around on a skateboard and putting marketing messages on a skateboard. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do it. That doesn't mean it wouldn't fit for some businesses, but I think of a particular niche, an audience, a target, a focus, partially because of your own background, but also of that word. Those things.
Well, what we're hoping people will think of when they mention the Boomer the Babe is the fact that maybe we have a little more experience also.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an experiential aspect of what we are and who we are and what we do that we've been there, we've done that, we've bought the T-shirt. Hell, we've printed the T-shirt.
Right.
So that's kind of what we want people to kind of understand. We're going to give them a straight answer. We're going to give them a straight answer based on all of our, 40-some years of knowledge, 65 years jointly, when you add the two of us together, in marketing and speaking and whatever else. So if people can see a value in that and are willing to accept the fact that we do have some gravitas there, then we're going to be able to help them. We can't help anybody that just blows us off or blows anybody off for that matter. That's a mindset on the recipient's part. That's nothing that we do. We try to do it in such a way that, this is where we are, this is what we offer, this is what we can do for you. Either you agree with us or you don't. If you don't, that's okay. So what, later days next? That's kind of the way we look at it. And that's a little bit of a baby boomer attitude.
Okay. I think I have a picture of what a brand is now. Okay. And we talked a couple of samples. And you talked a little bit about it, but give me more information on why that brand is so important. Okay, it's the first thing people think of. It's somehow identifying you. But why don't I just start a business with widgets and say, hey, I got good mousetraps, and if they're pretty good, people will buy them even if they don't really identify them as Joe's mousetrap or whatever else. Why is it important?
I've got a section in my book here that I got probably 38 definitions of a brand.
Okay, give us a couple.
I'm going to give you one.
Okay.
Okay, this is kind of the summation that I like. It's one of the longer ones, but I'm going to read it verbatim.
Good.
A brand is the sum of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the off strategy. It is defined by your best product as well as your worst product. It is defined by award-winning advertising as well as god-awful ads that slipped through the cracks, got approved, and not surprisingly, slipped into oblivion. It is defined by the accomplishment of your best employee, the shining star in the company who can do no wrong, as well as the mishaps of the worst hire you ever made. It's also defined by your receptionist, the music your customers are subject to when they are placed on hold, and every grand and finely worded statement by the CEO. The brand is also defined as derisive consumer comments overheard in the hallway, or in the chat room, or on the internet. Brands are sponges for content, for images, for fleeting feelings. They become psychological concepts held in the minds of the public, where they stay forever. As much as you can't entirely control a brand, you can at best only guide and influence it. there's my golf ball being guided on the golf course.
Yep.
Branding is a practice that has always existed above and beyond all other business strategies. It's an organized principle so broad and so defining, it can shape and direct just about everything a company does. And that is a quote from Scott Bedbury in The New Brand World. That's his definition. And of all the definitions that I came across, it's a lengthy definition, but it's very succinct.
Yep.
Finally, and maybe this will wrap it up for branding. Everything has been written and everything has been said about branding. It all boils down to one thing as far as I'm concerned. You can really go back to your high school days,
mm-hmm.
and you can see examples of branding. Remember the class tease,
mm-hmm.
or some called her the class slut. Rightly or wrongly, that was her brand. Okay. Remember the tough guy who liked to throw his weight around? That was his brand. How about the real brainy kid that studied and got great grades, but he wasn't the most popular? Well, that was his or her brand as well. How about the teacher that everybody liked? Here again, that's the brand. How about the teacher that gave you a lot of homework that nobody liked? Branded.
Right.
You didn't want that class. Did your mother or father ever say to you, keep that up and you'll ruin your brand? No, they probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But they did say, keep that up and you'll ruin your reputation.
Right.
So protect your reputation. It is another word for brand.
Right.
And if you do that, despite all the highfalutin rhetoric and everything you read about brands and all these definitions that I've got in this book about branding by experts, given by experts, there's one thing to remember. It's your reputation.
Right.
And that precedes everything else. You walk through the door with your reputation. Is it intact or not? That's
yeah.
all there is.
No, that's a fair point. And I guess if I use my simple lead into that question of Joe and his widget, if he's talking about Joe, people remember Joe, and if he talks about his widget, they remember that. But if he starts calling it a gadget, they'll remember that. But they're not going to be connected, I guess. And so you could spend a lot of money marketing Joe, or you could spend a lot of money marketing widgets and the best gadget. And in the end, if they're not connected, you just spend three times as much money, if not more, because you confuse people.
And I'll give you another example of that. I don't know if you know, there's a lady locally who has a promotional products business, Karen. Do you remember Karen?
I don't offhand.
Anyhow, she's got a Coyote Targeted Marketing. I'll give her a
okay,
call.
Yes. Yep.
Karen Lopinto. And when you talk about promotional products, which is logoed materials, logoed items, and you start calling it widgets, or you start calling it huzzarai, or tchotchkes,
right.
or trinkets and trash, she goes through the roof. It is promotional products. There's a difference.
Right.
Oh, I got a bunch of trinkets and trash that I can sell you, or I have some promotional products you might be interested in. There's a big difference there.
Yeah.
So that's how you treat your brand.
Yeah. Okay, fair point. Now, I'm not going to let you leave from branding quite yet. You see, all this new social media we hear about, Twitter, Facebook, and half a dozen others, is branding as important as it was in the age of radio when people listened to the radio in the evening before TV? And then now the age of TV, or maybe that's passing, where people sit around and listen to ads, billions of dollars worth of ads a year, promoting, hyping some sort of memorable image, good, bad, or indifferent. About the product or the company or about the brand itself. Is branding as important with those whole social media and all of those things introduced now?
Branding is equally as important, if not more so. Social media being Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn to some degree,
sure.
and many of the others, are nothing more than a conversation. And they're talking about you.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about your brand, quite conceivably. And you want to know what they're saying about your brand, so you need to be monitoring it. Okay. And if you're going to start tweeting, and you tweet some inane little thing that people take the wrong way, you can absolutely destroy your brand in 140 poorly chosen characters. So it's
or fewer.
Or fewer. That's correct. So it is very, very important that you watch what you say. Once you've hit send, you can't get it back. It's gone. And you have said whatever you've said, and you go, oh, crap, I wish I hadn't said that.
Right. Right.
You know, so you've got to really select it. I mean, here's the thing. You've got a written word. You and I have spoken words right here.
Right.
We can play off of one another and have some good times, and by the inflection in our voice, people can tell possibly whether we're serious or not serious,
right,
whether we're talking tongue-in-cheek or not.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on video, they can see your expression, they can hear your voice, they see everything about you. When it's written word, whether it's in the newspaper that somebody wrote something about you, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or whatever else, it's written word. It is black and white. When you said X, it is X, whether X is good or bad or indifferent.
Right.
That's what it is, and people have different ways of interpreting it, and there's no room for anything other than the way they're interpreting it, because that's all they have.
Right. Even worse, it's searchable.
Pardon me?
It's searchable.
It's
when you
searchable.
Type in Google or Yahoo or...
It's searchable.
Facebook,
well, I mean, look at how Twitter has gotten so many people in trouble, athletes and whatever else, for making absolutely asinine statements.
Yep.
I mean, it's just silly stuff. How many politicians have suffered because they've said something stupid on Twitter?
Yep.
It's very, very powerful. It's very, very popular, which some people want to get in because it is popular, and I think they can really make it work for them. And you can if done properly, but you can also destroy yourself.
Correct. And again,
so it's equally as important, I guess, is your answer.
Right.
If
exactly.
not more so.
Okay. Fair enough. Now, when someone loses their job, you touched on this a little bit, and they very often look for a second job. Now, during the recession, a lot of people didn't find jobs and still are looking, and they've been out of work for long periods of time. When that doesn't happen, they don't find the job, they even if they want to be entrepreneurial, very often they step into kind of a little bit easier path. They pick a franchise. They'll go buy a franchise because they don't have to develop a brand. Or they get into some form of multi-level marketing where, again, a brand exists and a whole marketing scheme exists, and you're able to earn some money by bringing others in. So it requires a little less creativity. Now, can I avoid branding if I go down that path?
Absolutely not. What you're doing is, if you select well, okay, you are selecting your brand by virtue of the fact that you chose
associated with them, right,
to associate with that organization. But there still is a factor of you being the person representing them. So now it's not only the brand of the product, which hopefully you've chosen well, and they've got a good, strong brand, and they've got a good, clean brand. They don't have any problems. They don't have any skeletons in the closet. That's all well and good. But now you have to make sure that you're branding yourself. And that is your personal brand, your reputation, you as an individual, as far as what you do, how you are, how you carry yourself, what you say when you're in public. So branding is still as important. Just some parts of it are handled by the national concern.
Right.
But it's up to you. If it's to be, it's up to me, regardless of what it is. It's up to you to make sure that your personal brand, in association with the brand you've chosen to represent, is they can work together.
So if you chose to be a Subway franchisee and you have a Subway location, sending people to Subway might help a little, but sending them to your Subway is what you want them to do. They want them to come to yours.
Yes, and when they get to your Subway, they want your employees to be courteous. They want to make sure they get the right amount of food on the Subway sandwich, because a Subway sandwich here and a Subway sandwich there should be the Subway sandwich. McDonald's built their fortune on that.
Right.
No matter where you go, McDonald's is a McDonald's is a McDonald's is a McDonald's.
Right.
So assuming that the same thing has to hold true with the Subway as an example, it becomes then a question of how well are you treated? Is the place clean? Does it look good? Is it inviting? Is the bread really fresh? Or are they trying to use yesterday's baked bread to make the sandwiches? What are they doing? And that's the part of the brand that you control and you need to control.
Well said. What are some of the other factors that a business needs to think about to be successful?
Well, there's always finances.
Finances are obviously one of those. Well, I touched on that a little bit.
Yeah, well, there's a seminar that we do, and I think we'll get into maybe.
That might be the transition. There's the flip side.
Yeah.
You can be successful and do some of the right things, and yet not everybody is.
There is a workshop that we do, and it's 10 reasons that businesses fail.
Okay.
And I can go through the list, and I'm not going to give you the long list, but I'm just going to give you a couple of them. Number one is the math doesn't work. There's just not enough demand for the product or service at that price, and it's not going to be able to produce a profit for the company.
Right. And that's kind of, I guess that's the one I think of when starting a business. Mm-hmm. Like, as a finance guy, that's the thing right. I leap toward. I don't think about how am I going to get the word out and everything else, because my assumption is if it's a good idea, it's going to, you know, people are going to come, or has been. Of course, I know better than that. Exactly right. So that's kind of one of those that I would expect very often people pick. And that's why the franchise and the multi-level marketing is chosen by a lot of people, because they don't have as much risk. It's been tested and tried.
Well, they don't have as much risk. It doesn't cost them generally. So if you're going to buy a Subway franchise or a McDonald's franchise, there's a lot of money.
Oh, still a big expense.
But if you're going to do some of these nutritional products that are out there, and many of them very, very good, many of them with great reputations, if you're going to be doing that type of a MLM, direct sales company,
investment very small.
There's very small investment, and is a tremendous upside provided that you work it.
Correct.
So you don't have to worry about, whether or not there's a demand. You got to just make sure that people understand that your product is one of those that will fill that nutritional health demand, and that becomes your job then. But you have to make sure that the company will produce enough profit with the items or whatever it is you're selling, and is it scalable?
Right.
I think that's probably the key word there.
And that's not something everybody's trained in, as you said, especially if they've just left the job and didn't find another and they decide to start a business. That finance training business model, the whole business plan, the financial plan in that business plan is always the toughest part. Most people just kind of say, well, I'll get around to that after I have a few years' experience.
Yeah.
But that doesn't always work. Okay, hit a couple more.
Well, along the same idea, same lines as finance and numbers and dollars, poor accounting can absolutely torpedo a business,
right.
And also lack of a cash cushion. And you've got to be able to have a little bit of money there, you know, so that if this is going to be your sole endeavor, what are you going to live on while you're getting it going?
Right.
That's something you have to take a look at. So, and that's one of the primary reasons. One of the top 10 reasons that businesses fail, not enough cash cushion. They can't survive while they're getting it off the ground.
Yeah, and that's one of those that, you know, the finance guys we spend a lot of time on, because it's not just during the startup process, but actually the growth process is the worst. Because people pay you 30 days, let's say, but you have to buy stuff in the meantime. You've got to grow that business. So during the growth curve, a lot of people actually go under because of cash. I actually have a T-shirt. I haven't worn it for quite a while. It's just bright yellow, and it kind of shows through anything I wear it under, that says happiness is positive cash flow. It's not just profitability. But, that is a fair point. And I got to admit, those come to mind immediately. Hit me with some of them that might be less financial.
Let me go to this one. A dysfunctional management.
Okay, now I'm not going to plan to have a dysfunctional management. The people I hire are going to be good, and they're not going to be dysfunctional. Tell me how that happens. So give me kind of a little bit.
Well, that's kind of like lack of focus, lack of planning, lack of vision, lack of standards, and everything else that goes into good management. And if you're not doing that, it is dysfunctional.
When you're starting a business.
And when you're starting a business.
Top of the business.
That's right. That's right. And then if you throw into that, as far as dysfunction is concerned, if you throw in fighting partners or unhappy relatives into the mix, you have a disaster.
Oh, boy.
You know, so, I mean, that is an example of dysfunctional management. Now, what do you do to avoid it? Well, I'm of the opinion, and I don't take my own advice because my wife is my partner.
We're working together, exactly.
But business partnerships are like like marriages. Very easy to get into,
right?
But you play hell getting out of them.
Correct.
You know, so I mean, you got to make sure that whoever your partner is going to be one that's going to be with you through thick and thin, come hell or high water.
Yep. You said it was easy to get to. I like that. And there's the financial analogy. It says it costs you about a grand to get married, about a $100,000 to get divorced.
Yeah, there's all kinds of analogies, that kind of stuff. You know, it's like the guy that buys a boat. Two happiest days in a boat owner's life are the day he buys it and the day he sells it.
There you go. A hole in the water to which they're
exactly.
Throwing money. No, that's a fair point. And I guess that gets to one that reminds me, and the flip side of a lot of these, I guess, give you some of those success factors that I was trying to think through. I didn't try to put a list together because that'd be way too much to cover in our show today. But one of them is that succession planning. I mean, you know, the baby, the boomer and the babe Inc. You eventually get this built and get it all kind of designed, set the standards, and do what you're doing. You eventually have to think about how it's going to continue. And obviously picking the people that are in that right age group potentially, and they fit those profiles. And so you want it to continue, because if it makes money, you'd like to continue to reap those things. And you wouldn't want to shut it down because all of your clients are used to taking advantage of your services. So those are some of those, the risks. Point to some of the success factors. Those are the things I have to plan. And I don't have time day one to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a non-issue.
Right.
Because if the business doesn't last 2 years, then why worry about succession planning or the future?
When you talk about succession planning, I mean, there's such a thing as are you gonna hire people to run your business,
right,
and trust them so you can go off into retirement or semi-retirement,
right,
and reap those rewards of what you've built? Are you going to have family members, offspring,
right,
whatever, take over the business? How are they going to work into it?
Correct.
How are you going to make sure that they learn all the tricks and trade of the trade that you have garnered over the years? And here's the thing that I find is interesting. What happens if your offspring don't want any part of your business?
You bet.
Now what do? Now you're locked into one of two ways. You either have to find that person, okay,
yep,
which is always tough to have somebody see your dream and believe and work your dream, or your other option is sell it, cash out, close it down, and go to Tahiti.
Right.
I mean, those, I don't know what other options you have.
Well, you could go to Arizona. We're right here, but you know, a lot of other people would come to Arizona. housing prices are on sale, if nothing else.
Yeah.
We can talk
about it. Let me just
give you his with another one. These are
I'll give you another one here. This is
what's number 10? We started with
number 10?
Yeah, what's number 10?
We've already kind of hit on number 10.
Okay.
While we have it in this discussion, a declining market.
Okay.
A declining market can be one of the reasons a business fails. You look at bookstores, music stores, printing businesses. Many others they're dealing with changes in technology.
Right.
That's why we're doing e-books.
Right.
Because we're publishers, but we're publishing e-books now because of the change of technology. How many magazines are going out of business? How many newspapers are going out of business? Everything's done on the web. They got these big news websites and so on and so forth now. That's where the technology is, and that's where the news is. Now, how do you fund those?
Right.
How do you get your advertisers for those that are going to pay that bill?
Right.
It's one thing you say, okay, we're going to put your ad in the newspaper. It's going to run in the newspaper. What do you do on your website, as an example? And we're facing this dilemma ourselves.
Sure.
Somebody is going to come in, and they're going to be a sponsor of our radio show. This radio show goes into archive. Your radio show,
correct,
goes into
archive.
Correct. It's there forever.
Yep.
So if somebody pays you $100 to advertise for a 30-second spot on your radio show,
mm-hmm,
if it were on terrestrial radio, you could say, I'm going to run it for $100 for 13 weeks, and
right,
you're going to get 13 spots.
Yep, for a point.
On here, you get $100, and you get how many spots? Because once it goes into archive, it stays there. That ad never comes off. So that's some of the considerations you have to make and think about when you're doing your looking at your technology and your aspect about and declining markets. And are you pricing yourself out of the market? Is the
right
technology you're using, is it causing you more of a dilemma than not? So. Those are examples of things you have to consider. Then you also have to consider the consumer demand. If there's still demand for it, if there's no more demand for it, then all of a sudden you're going to have no more customers, and you're going to have a declining business, going out of business. And then all kinds of competition from the large conglomerates and large companies. Can you withstand that? What can you offer that is going to be special to them? to your customers that's not going to be able to be done. I mean, how many times do you go into a major department store, as an example, a major retailer, and I'm looking for X. Yeah, it's over there.
Right.
It's over there down on aisle 15A on the right-hand side, halfway up. Go find it, you know. Really be nice if somebody would take you by the hand and walk you back there and discuss the features of whatever item it is, but they don't know the features of it anymore. When I used to work in the hardware store years ago when I was going to college, I knew where every size screw was, every size nut and bolt was. I knew where to find it, what drawer it was in.
Right.
I knew what it was used for. Was it a wood screw, a metal screw, or a machine screw? I knew all that information.
Right.
There was no 17-year-old that knows that today.
Correct.
You still have to screw things together in your house, though.
The stores that still offer that, I was just going to pick on the hardware stores since in the housing business we spend more time in those stores than anything else. The ones that do offer that don't tend to have the 17-year-olds working there.
That's true.
They do tend to have the people that have been around for a while.
That's really true.
Do know when you ask them a question is, hey, I want to put a fence together and it's got to screw into a block wall. What the heck am I to use to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I actually didn't know that answer initially when I moved here. And they showed me the type of expanding thing. So, no, I hear your point. But on this, I guess, declining market, when I first hear that, I say, we've all put up with a declining market over the last few years. But that's not what we're talking about. It would have been Pete Peters staying in the newspaper business because that's where he started. And trying to make a living today selling ads for newspapers in a declining market. So it's setting up your business so it's not defined that narrowly or that tied to something that is in decline.
And that is one of the reasons that the Boomer the Babe Incorporated does all the things that we do.
Sure.
Because we always have a path for somebody to assist them in their marketing at what we think are fair prices. So that's what you've got to be able to do. You've got to be more things to more people.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the market declines, it may be because that segment of the market is less than it once was, or it may be that you're declining your interest in it because you can see that coming and you're going to shift your focus a little bit.
Right.
So it's also multiple streams of income. You can't put all your eggs in one basket nowadays. You have to have multiple streams of income.
Fair point. Now, it seems like these factors apply to all businesses. We're not talking just entrepreneurial ventures. We're talking about businesses that have been around for years, and it's probably more applying to those that are around for a long time, that these factors of failure, downfalls of business. So I assume you'll keep us posted when you're going to have that next seminar.
No, we will. Let me just give you a couple closing thoughts on this.
Sure.
Blockbuster Video is pretty much gone.
Yep.
Why did they leave? They didn't identify the fact that Netflix was coming on board,
right,
and the little red box or the big red box, whatever they call it, in front of all the Circle K's was on board. They still had the big, tall, big brick and mortars, all expenses going on and so on and so forth. Netflix and the red box took over,
right,
and that's exactly what happened. And some of the major bookstores, one of them now is having problems.
Yep, absolutely.
Because they were not willing to take a look at the new model, which is Amazon.com.
Correct.
And go online. And that's some of the things that cause a business to decline. It's not paying attention to what's going on around you. So the thing that this article and this seminar wraps up with is that you have many forgiving friends and relatives, but entrepreneurship is rarely forgiving. Eventually, everything shows up in the soup, and if people don't like the soup, employees stop working for you, customers stop doing business with you, and that is why businesses fail.
I like that. Oh, it's good wrap up on that, and indeed something we'd want to make sure that people are aware of when you're having that seminar. It sounds like very interesting stuff, things to each of us to think through.
We plan on having one of those seminars here in the next quarter or so.
Okay, and I will let people know as you let me know when you schedule that. Well, I'd really like to thank you, Pete Peters, for being with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Been a lot of fun.
We've covered a lot of ground.
It's not often that I get to sit here with somebody as knowledgeable as you are and pontificate.
Well, I don't know if it's pontificating or just educating us. I really enjoyed it. And you also helped us realize that, and I think some of your phrases are right on, that we not only can be, but we need to be in control of our financial destiny. We're in charge. I thought about a couple quick connections to the Wealth DNA framework, the desire. Many people are unfortunately subconsciously addicted to poverty. They don't think beyond becoming an employee and working for somebody else. A lot of market opportunities out there to be exploited. And quite frankly, there's too few entrepreneurs to exploit all of them. I happen to be working on 5 entrepreneurial ventures in addition to my base business. I shouldn't be doing 5. There should be 5 other people that would be working on those ideas and doing them instead of me. How about knowledge? We need to continue to get educated, and whether it's seminars like Pete's talking about or programs like this one, or even the memory course I took, or learning about finance, sales, and marketing. We each have to market and sell ourselves, whether to employers, customers, or clients. Action, in the end, if you don't have the confidence, you don't move forward, you don't use the knowledge you've gained. You don't take the risks, you take the safe route and get left behind. You see, the safe route can be risky. Let me remind you about our next Wealth DNA radio show, second Monday of the month, April 11th at 8 a.m. Same place, same time, no more time changes for a while. So again, second Monday of the month, as well as the fourth Monday. That's Monday, April 11th, 8 a.m. And our next seminar will be the very next day, Learn to Earn a Higher Return. That's held at Entrust Arizona's Knowledge Center. If you're on our email list, I'll give you the exact address. And if you're not, send me an email, ron@wealthdna.us. And again, if you click that follow button on the upper left-hand side of the screen, you'll also be reminded of shows, this one and others, in the baby. Let's try that. Again, the Boomer and the Babe Network. Let me leave you, I jotted a few thoughts on the topics we just talked about, Pete. And let me share those with you as we close. If you have an idea and don't pursue it, that idea isn't worth anything. An idea that you had, that someone else pursues, is now their idea, their company, their income stream. The greatest invention kept in a closet isn't worth a damn. Just because you have a better mousetrap does not mean the world will beat a path to your door. Forget the old sayings. You need to make others aware of it by branding, marketing, and selling. No money is made until a sale is made. If you lack the capital to market your idea, then you need to market your idea to investors who can partner with you. That's what investors are all about. They want to make some money in the process. If small businesses are the engine of economic growth, entrepreneurs, folks like you, me, and others that listen to this show right now, entrepreneurs are the engine of small business. Have a great day, folks.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.